all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Friday, November 11th. It was 66 degrees on Lake Wissota this time yesterday. It is 26 degrees right now. If you don't like the weather in Wisconsin, wait about 5 minutes. We definitely had that as that cold front went through. This is Veterans Day, so our deep, sincere gratitude to everybody who has served in the uniforms of our country through the various branches of service. This is our day to tip our caps to you, to every one of you who served. We occasionally have to remind people the differences between Veterans Day, which is for all who served, versus Memorial Day for those who gave their lives in service of our country, versus Armed Forces Day, which is kind of a celebration of all the armed forces. They also each have their own birthdays, as the Marine Corps did earlier this week. But on this Veterans Day, we salute everybody who has served in our armed forces. Coming up this morning, still a little bit of an election hangover. Trumpers are no longer dominant, and Democrats no longer control a large chunk of the congressional agenda, at least we think, pending more ballots being counted. But regardless, does this mixed bag of election results mean that things can finally get back to whatever passes for normal in American politics? We're going to talk to Courier Newsroom political editorial director Carolyn Fidler and Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times. We're also going to hear this hour from Tammy Baldwin on the predatory loan practices of private for-profit colleges. You'll recall we talked to her earlier in the week about getting out to vote, and we asked her about her most recent proposal about predatory lending as well. So we'll hear that. We also have a guest sportscaster. I know we haven't had a regular sportscaster, so how can we have a guest one? But we're going to wrap up the show with a guest sportscaster, a good friend here, UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher is going to come in and preview the weekend in sports, probably in a much different tone than the sports wrap-up I'm going to give you here in just a minute or two. But first, a reminder that you can always send us your feedback, your questions, recipes, whatever you like, at radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Or you can phone 715-388-7155. And screening those calls and pushing those buttons is Aaron Zomers in the producer chair this morning. Aaron, good morning to you.
Good morning, and happy Veterans Day to my dad, if you're listening.
Exactly. There we go. Navy. Thank you so much. I think most people are back into the swing of things from a circadian rhythm standpoint. Maybe, although other people I've noticed are starting to take some time off post-election. That was always my intention, was I tried to get out, you know, and rest as soon as possible after the election. And then, you know, 2020 happened. And, well, frankly, back to 2000 as well, that with some election uncertainty, you probably want to hang around for a few days. And so that's what I've done. But I will not be here Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. We will run best of shows during those times. And then I will be back with you live first thing Thursday morning next week. All right. From a sports standpoint, I've mentioned a couple times, but I just think it's a cool event. Folks in the Milwaukee area and anybody making the road trip can watch the Badger men and women's basketball teams playing on a baseball diamond. The floor has been set up at American Family Field. The Badger women take on Kansas State this afternoon at 3:30, and the Badger men take on Stanford at 6:30 this evening. Badger football team, I'm sorry, Aaron, were you? No? Okay, good. I was going to say the Badger football team is at Iowa. That game is tomorrow afternoon at 2:30. The Bucks are in San Antonio for a game that starts tonight at 7 o'clock. Packers are getting ready to take on Dallas at Lambeau Field. 3:25 is the start time on Sunday. And then there's going to be a short period of rest because they also have next week's Thursday night football game. So Sunday afternoon against Dallas, then Thursday night, Tennessee the Titans will come to Lambeau Field for a 7:15 game there. From a baseball standpoint, Hot Stove League updates. The Brewers have decided not to pick up the option on pitcher Brad Boxberger. That makes him a free agent. They are bringing back catcher Peyton Henry, a former top prospect for the Brewers before he was traded to Miami in 2021 for John Curtis. But now the Brewers have arranged to bring him back here. And as I mentioned, we'll talk to Dan Schumacher a bit as the athletic director at UW-Eau Claire. We'll talk about the WIAC and other college football or other college sports happening around Wisconsin. And one last note is that the state high school football playoffs in their penultimate round here, basically the state semifinals, the final four in each of the eight divisions, and all of those games are scheduled to start tonight at 7 o'clock. And if time allows, maybe we will go through some of those games in case you might want to decide to attend despite the chilly weather that's out there. But I guess it really wouldn't be Wisconsin if we didn't have that in time for the football playoffs. And one little historical note, I mentioned we usually do this day in history around 6:50, and we'll do that again today with Carolyn Fiddler. We'll do some music and such. I noted that the Edmund Fitzgerald sank 47 years ago this week. Found a very interesting thread online with some behind-the-scenes looks at that. We'll talk about that at some point this morning as well. All that and more on a busy Friday here on Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Wrightlow. We'll be back. Give you a little something for treadmill music in case that's how you're getting the blood pumping this morning. Coming up, Carolyn Fiddler at 6:50, Mark Jacob at 7:30, Dan Schumacher at 7:50. Again, to get in touch with the show, 715-388-7155. Over at UpNorthNewsWI.com, a couple of stories I wanted to highlight for you. We have a very brief quiz on there. Not a quiz, it's probably more of a survey. You know, quizzes, you know, right or wrong. Here it's, you know, what kind of voter are you? We ask, I think it's about five questions, asking if you're, a casual voter or a regular voter, typically a single party voter. Do you mix it up a bit? Again, nothing too intrusive. It's just five pretty basic questions to help us get a feel for the folks that go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, as far as how much civic engagement we have amongst the readership. So I really hope that you would go over and take a look at that. UpNorthNewsWI.com. You'll have to scroll down a little bit, and down there you'll see a headline that says quiz, what type of voter are you? And so you can take a look at that. And let me tell you that you'll also see, for example, a story that reminds people, and I had to correct myself earlier as well, it may be a while yet before we actually know who controls the House and the Senate. Every state has different rules. Every state has a different process for counting the votes. They have different deadlines for when ballots come in. There isn't a national standard for all of this. And so as a result, between Arizona, California, Alaska, which now has ranked choice voting, Colorado, Nevada, Oregon, there's still some votes to be counted. So you can see that article online. You can also find it on our social media feeds. Go to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and just search for Up North News WI and give that a like or a follow. A couple of the feature stories on there include an article wrapping up Wisconsin's highest rated, most reviewed restaurants of 2022, at least according to Yelp. And let's see, Sharita Booker gives us a little guide of what to do and where to go if you selected events that are happening around the state. So take a look at that, again, all on our website. Looking at some of the headlines here, the first thing I wanted to point out is that Republicans, of course, will still control the Assembly and the State Senate, the legislature in Wisconsin. They still have to work with Governor Evers if they choose to. And again, that's a big if they choose to. I told you yesterday that I'd put up an article on the website with takeaways from the election. And I was interviewed on a Chicago radio station yesterday, and they asked me about that. And they said, you know, why are you saying here that Republican legislators are going to suddenly turn around and work with Governor Evers? And I had to correct the host and say, I didn't say that. I said, that's a thing to watch for, to see if the legislature will do that. And even yesterday, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who did win despite a big push by Trumpers to try to unseat him, in an interview and in remarks after being reelected by his caucus as Speaker of the Assembly, he tries to portray himself as willing to talk to Governor Evers, maybe willing to try to work with him. But then it's pretty clear when you drill down into what he's really saying, that's really not his intention at all on a couple of fronts here. First off, on the state's abortion ban, which again dates back to 1849. It's archaic, it's unclear, and it was set aside for 50 years when Roe v. Wade was the law of the land, when women had a constitutional right to privacy on making their reproductive health care choices. That's gone. The 1849 ban is back in place. Governor Evers and State Attorney General Josh Call, who also won re-election this week, have a lawsuit pending trying to get that lawsuit, or trying to get that law, rather, that 1849 ban rejected, thrown out. And Speaker Voss, asked about it yesterday, again, trying to sound conciliatory, said that there is a chance that he may ask the legislature to vote on modifying the ban to remove or to provide exceptions for rape and incest victims. Now, right now, the 1849 law does have a way, though the language is vague, to save the life of the mother, but there is no exception to that ban for rape and incest victims. And Speaker Voss has said that he may do that, in part, of course, using his political calculus. He said he's doing it in order to prevent the Evers lawsuit from overturning the law altogether. So what he's saying is he does want to keep the abortion ban in place for most women in Wisconsin, force them to go elsewhere to get the abortion care they might need due to a complex pregnancy or a host of other medical and personal circumstances. He wants to keep the ban in place, but is willing to provide the rape and incest exceptions. That's something that Governor Evers has indicated is not what he's willing to do. And Voss's comments made it sound like, of course, they're going to try to portray Evers as the one who's intransigent, who's a bad guy for not, you know, working with Republicans on this, you know, compromise, quote unquote. Evers has made clear this is one of those issues not to compromise on. Women deserve to have the rights that they had under Roe v. Wade, and that he wants to accept nothing less. Now, I'm not telling you that he will definitely not sign that. I'm just telling you what his signals were, and now what Voss's signals are as well. Now, the other issue where, again, there's discussion of compromise, but, you know, will there really be? And that comes over on the state Senate side of things. And that's because the state Senate now does have a two-thirds majority for Republicans. They don't in the Assembly, so it's not like the legislature can completely override Governor Evers' vetoes. That would be a huge deal. Essentially, Republicans would run all of state government and could almost render a Democratic governor, you know, politically impotent. But that didn't happen because in the Assembly, they don't have a two-thirds majority. They do in the state Senate, and what that means is that the Senate could now impeach state officials and remove them from office. Essentially, they've been able to do this already. They did it with Brad Path. Recall that he was Governor Evers' nominee to be the state Secretary of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. But Path was one of about 100 Evers nominees that Senate Republicans refused to confirm. They refused to do their job, because a chief executive should get to pick their cabinet and their department heads. The advise and consent function of the Senate is, if not ceremonial, is certainly meant to give a backstop if there were to be something untoward about a nominee. They discover something, you know, criminal or otherwise making them unworthy of public service. It's not designed to be used for partisan spats and disagreements and petty politics. But that's what Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature have done, and they still have not paid a price for that. And in fact, when they did not like something that Brad Paff said when he was running the Department of Agriculture, they said, okay, now we're going to vote on your nomination. They rejected the nomination, and that essentially fires him. You know, nominees can start their job, but they still need that Senate confirmation at some point. And the way our laws are written here, which desperately need fixing, they can just put off that nomination vote, hold it, vote no, and then that person is fired. That's what they did to Brad Paff, who then turned around and ran for election in the state Senate. So now he serves in the very state Senate that fired him. That state Senate still has plenty of nominees to confirm. And what I had said in my article about takeaways from the election is maybe it's time for Senate Republicans to grow the hell up and start first in a show of good faith by approving those dozens upon dozens of Evers nominees that they sat on for his entire first term. That maybe this is the way in the second term to show, I don't know, some maturity. And instead, what we're getting indications from the Senate Republicans and from Voss is that Voss noted the state Senate now has that power to impeach civil officers because you can impeach by a two-thirds vote in the Senate. So on the one hand, they're saying, well, maybe we're willing to compromise and work with the governor, but then they turn around and say, well, we're first going to try to force him to continue to accept a ban on abortion with a couple of exceptions for a few people. And rather than confirm the nominees, we're thinking we might start impeaching officials throughout the Evers administration. So while that's not the same as controlling the full agenda, it is a way of saying yet again that Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature do not seek to govern. They seek to rule. And they will do that by any means necessary. And Governor Evers has already done plenty of end runs around Republicans, especially with pandemic relief aid. I mean, for the past 4 years, by and large, you know, he's been the roadrunner, and legislative Republicans have been Wile E. Coyote, trying to do things, and, you know, then it backfires on them. And it backfired spectacularly in the sense that Tony Evers, they wanted so badly to deny him re-election. And instead, he not only won a second term, he won it by well over double the margin with which he won the governor's office in 2018. And let's remember what legislative Republicans did in 2018. Shortly after, Evers unseated Scott Walker. He beat him in November. He was going to be inaugurated in January of 2019. In between, in December of 2018, those Republicans called themselves into special session. Remember, they've never really taken Governor Evers seriously on special sessions, but they know how to do it. They did it weeks, just a few weeks after Evers won election. And many of you already know this. They then proceeded to strip out some of the governor's powers, along with that of the attorney general. Something that they didn't do for Scott Walker when a Republican was in the governor's chair. Again, petty politics. Can you do it? Yes. Had it been done before? No. Nobody had been that petty. Nobody had been that childish, churlish, immature, reckless, and disrespectful of the will of the voters until this batch of Republicans in the legislature. And for those of you saying, Pat, please stop being mean to them. You know, we want them to work with the governor. They can do that on their own. If they want to say, well, some people are criticizing us, so we're going to dig in, that's on them. They've already proven that they don't actually deserve and did not earn the majority in the legislature. We just saw it again. On the aggregate, the vote total statewide for assembly candidates was almost exactly 50-50. You have to fudge the numbers a little bit one way or the other, simply because there were districts where there was not Democratic opposition, because the assembly map has been so rigged that no Democrat even ran in some of these districts. But when you average it out using Biden's vote totals, for example, you get a 50-50 share of the vote. Republicans got 50% of the vote and yet have almost two-thirds of the seats in the legislature. The word you're looking for is corrupt. And we'll see if they can rise above that in this new term. We'll be back with more. This is Up North News.
Subordinate. Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind.
White voters under 30 are the only white category that Democrats carried in this past election. And I really think that, like, all of these people who kind of, all these old heads who kind of sat around and were like, well, you know, student debt relief isn't what, they need to apologize. They need to apologize and get out of the way, because student debt relief drove young voters, and more policies like that over the next 2 years will also drive them towards 2024.
And climate. You talk about the Inflation Reduction Act. There were huge climate pieces. Biden's climate agenda, large portions of it made it through. And there are activists that came together around this one particular issue.
Look, y'all made this possible. And we're just getting started. We're just getting started. We saw extraordinary results in these midterms elections that no one thought possible. More independents voted for Democrats and Republicans in this election. Young people, you voted in historic numbers again, just as you did 2 years ago. Young people voted to continue addressing the climate crisis, gun violence, personal rights and freedoms, student debt relief, all those things which you stepped up to do.
There's what the president and some election commentators on TV had to say about young voters, and they emphasized two issues, especially the climate crisis, which young voters understand all too well, and student loan debt, which is the focus of comments we're going to hear in just a moment from Senator Tammy Baldwin. But they also noted gun violence as well. And if you didn't catch it in the one comment, I'll say it again. For Democrats and for white voters, the only white voters who went majority Democrat were those under the age of 30. Those are the people that progressives need to appeal to. And that's, I'm not saying not to talk about Medicare and Social Security. Those are important things too, and those are important constituencies to appeal to. And I'm not saying don't talk to all women about abortion rights. That's very important too. But young voters, I mean, it's cliche to say they're the key to the future, but you're either not student loan debt, not just the, you know, the typical student loans, but especially the ones that are downright predatory, that were put forward by diploma mills, these for-profit private colleges whose degrees were essentially worthless. So there were some people that were on defense about the student loan debt forgiveness, saying, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. People resent it. Not Senator Tammy Baldwin. She's gone on offense to say, not only is this the right thing to do, but let's start to go after the ones who are preying on young people and saddling them with way more education debt than they need. So when Senator Tammy Baldwin talked to us the other day about getting out the vote, I also took a couple of minutes to ask her about the letter that she sent to the U.S. Department of Education saying, let's do more about this issue. Here's what she had to say. Couple of weeks back, you and some of your colleagues really decided you've heard about the criticism about student loan debt forgiveness, but you're remembering the root cause about some of the predatory behavior that's out there, and you want the Department of Education to frankly do something about it. What should they be doing?
I have followed a lot of predatory behavior in this arena, but also neglect of some of the things that previous Congresses have done that should have led to loan forgiveness. So let me start with the for-profit colleges that lured people in with fancy marketing programs and advertising and promising, you know, wonderful futures. And then many, after encouraging students to take out massive loans to pay the tuition, some of them closed, just outright closed. And so you were stuck without a diploma of any sort, without a degree of any sort, and tens of thousands of dollars worth of loans. And the previous administration made it difficult for those students to get any sort of justice. And so I've joined with colleagues to say, look, when you have been the victim of a predatory institution, there needs to be redress. We would love it, of course, if the now defunct for-profit institutions could pay the students back. But certainly none of them should be in a position of debt for life and foreclosing other opportunities because of this sort of predatory behavior. The other one I want to mention is that we have over time encouraged students to pursue particular careers in areas where we have worker shortages that are vital, and said, you know, if you work at an underserved school or in a as a teacher or in an underserved area as a nurse, that you can have debt forgiveness or interest off, all sorts of different plans we've had, if you dedicate yourself to that position for, say, 10 years or a fixed period of time. And under the previous administration and that Secretary DeVos, students were, you know, finishing their 10th year saying, hurrah, it's going to be forgiven. The rest, they've paid on it throughout. That's part of the agreement. And just saw those things reneged on. And in too many cases, it was like, oh, you know, it was the next door school district you needed to work at, not that one. I mean, it was picayune sort of things that were disgraceful. And so getting that back on track is also a priority. And I think we're making a lot of headway there, too.
And what you're hearing again from Senator Baldwin is undoing the damage from the wrecking ball that was Betsy DeVos and Donald Trump in the areas of education, which, again, far too many Republicans and right wingers are looking to dismantle and put in the hands of profiteers and religious schools, rather than free public education and affordable public education. Student loan debt is not something that needs to necessarily go away. You can have that fair debate about, you know, should the first 2 years of, you know, post-secondary education, you know, be at low cost or free or what have you. But you certainly do not have to tolerate the predatory lending. We wouldn't tolerate it for farmers or for entrepreneurs. There's no reason we have to target it or tolerate it, rather, for students. And you can provide targeted relief on education debt, the way that Senator Baldwin described. That, again, if you, we talk about the labor shortage. Republicans talked about the labor shortage all the time. Their idea was to simply take, you know, primary education, you know, K-12 education, and do nothing but teach worker skills rather than the humanities and critical thinking and things like that. The better idea is that when you're talking about, you know, college and schooling beyond that, that if there are gaps in the labor force and people want to pursue an education there, then you make that even more affordable to get that education that our labor force needs. The value of education should be self-evident. It is not. And as a result, we live in a state that has had a war on education, you know, even predating Act 10, But of course, Act 10 was the nuclear weapon that was used at the time. And the state is still working its way back from that particular wrecking ball. And it's doing it one referendum at a time. Instead of the state providing, at least two-thirds funding through a progressive income tax structure for education aid, Wisconsin Republicans have said, well, we're actually going to pass that cost on. We don't want to say in the legislature that we raise taxes. So we're going to force local school boards to raise taxes, which are property taxes instead, and that you're going to have to put this up for a vote. So the people who are anti-tax and anti-public schools will always be able to make some noise and try to get referenda defeated. The state imposed revenue limits so that even if you could go to taxpayers locally and say, would you mind paying more in taxes for education? Again, they're constrained by the revenue limits that they have that then force them to go to voters. So this year, we're seeing a near record amount of referendum questions about school districts on the ballots around Wisconsin earlier this year, and then again this week. And that included, based on this story from Wisconsin Public Radio, nearly $2 billion on programs ranging from efforts to retain and recruit high-quality teachers to new construction projects to capital and operating budgets. Now, I'm not saying every dollar of that had to be approved, that every dollar of it should just automatically be granted. But I am saying that if they all passed, that would be $2 billion in higher property taxes when Republican legislators are sitting on a pile of money worth $5 billion. And they did nothing to earn it. Governor Evers did that through stewardship of the state economy, through making sure that businesses could stay afloat, that households could stay afloat. And in doing so, they continued to be taxpayers. And that led to a surplus based on already lowered expectations in the early days of the pandemic. It should have been a win-win for everybody. There's enough there to lower taxes and make investments. Republicans sat on it, squandered it this year, hoping Tim Michels would be elected governor and so that they could push that money out just in tax cuts targeting the wealthy. That's not going to happen now because Governor Evers won re-election. Sure would be great if Republicans could work on that $5 billion surplus and look at the investments Governor Evers wants to make in schools and also do tax cuts. But it would also, they'd be heroes for all of the school referendum questions that would not go on ballots in the future, because the state finally did its part to invest in schools. So these referenda questions were put out this week, and there were 81 of them, not necessarily in 81 school districts, because some school districts had multiple questions on the ballot, two, maybe three. But of those 81 school referenda, 51 of the 81 were approved by voters. And that number might go higher. Some districts were still counting votes as late as Wednesday afternoon when Wisconsin Public Radio put this particular story together. But in all, not just the 51 that were approved, but voters in 42 districts were asked to raise revenue limits for their schools. Meaning, we're not looking to build a new school. We're not looking to remodel the gym or add a new computer lab or anything. This is just cost to continue current operations. We can't do it and serve all of the students and pay all the bills without a little bit more help. And so 42 districts were simply asking to raise revenue limits, along with 50 districts earlier this year that asked for the same thing. Sorry, why? Take a little sip of coffee if you noticed on the video feed my Wisconsin Badgers mug that we have today instead of the Up North News mug. There we go. Again, we had the frozen revenue limits, which can be addressed by this next legislature through a budget. I've talked a lot about the budget surplus, but that's the budget surplus from the current budget that expires next year. Legislators come January will hear a budget address from Governor Evers. They will get a budget plan from Governor Evers, and then they will come up with their own plan. And again, in a perfect world with split control, both sides would work together to craft a new state budget. That's not what Republican lawmakers have done the past two budgets during Governor Evers' first term. But as I was saying in the last half hour, they have a chance this year to be the grownups that they can be and come up with a win-win for the new state budget and that $5 billion surplus. More after this. You're up north.
Regulators! Mount up!
It was a clear black night, a clear white
there,
moon.
That's for you, girl.
On the streets, trying to
yeah.
Some skirts for the E, so I could get
we play Regulate for Carolyn Fiddler because it was Warren G's birthday yesterday, and we purposefully didn't mention it in yesterday's history, saving it just for you.
Oh, you're so sweet.
But now I'm going to make you feel old. How old did Warren G turn yesterday on his birthday?
51.
Oh, very close. 52. Good work out of you. All right. Hey, this I had told Aaron that this was the part where I was going to read some of the other birthdays and things, but I forgot to put that in front of me. Oh, here we go.
Hey.
Sorry about that. Let's see. What have we got here? Kurt Vonnegut was born on this day in 1922. Oh, just two more birthdays I want to tell you about. How old is Demi Moore today?
Oh. 50.
60.
No.
Demi Moore is 60. I know she looks 50 or probably 30 because, you know, surgery is a good thing.
In that
same vein, Leonardo DiCaprio. How old is Leo today? His girlfriend is 22, I think. But how old is
he? I would say twice plus seven are the women he's dating.
Okay.
No, I'm going to guess 53.
48. Or 48 for Leo today. All right, let's do with a couple of songs. Name the year. All right, let's see. The first one is from the Cars, right, Aaron?
Here she comes again.
When she's dancing beneath the starry sky.
Cars, My Best Friend's Girl. What year?
83.
That would be a great guess, but I have to find it first. No, 1978.
Ooh, whoops.
Peaked at number four.
That was BC. So things like that happened before Carolyn.
That was
Carolyn
BMTV as well. All right, let's go with the next one from our friend Prince here. You can't say 1999.
No, I was actually going to say 89.
82.
Damn.
1982, Prince kicked off his 1999 tour with the first of, now here's a tour, 87 stops. And you can tell Prince wasn't like the huge superstar yet in 1982. No offense to the folks in Tennessee, but he kicked off the tour in Chattanooga.
Wow.
Probably had bigger venues for tours that began after that. All right, one more, and I believe it's Ms. Brittany who's going to talk to us next. Hit Me Baby One More Time won 4 MTV Awards on this day in
96.
I'll give you a hint. Prince actually just sang about it.
No, 99. Wow, I didn't realize it was that late.
I know. See? Woo. Time flies. All right. Thanks for playing with us. Now we get to what you want to do. You're here to talk about State House Action, your newsletter that follows state level politics in all 50 states. So you've been awake since probably Tuesday morning.
I am so tired.
Putting all this together. I have to say, I shouldn't give away which guest, but I talked to several guests yesterday that I'd pre-taped. And one of them, we couldn't even start right away because he paused for a moment because he was trying to think of something. And he said, Pat, I have forgotten how to count. And I understood, you know.
That's so relatable.
So relatable. What are your takeaways? What are you talking about in the newsletter as far as what your readers should probably glean from all the results?
My readers should glean that it was a very good night for Democrats down ballot. Mm-hmm. The red wave crested in exactly one place, and that's in the state Supreme Court races,
mm-hmm.
which Democrats, it's the new Democratic neglect as opposed to state legislatures, which ongoing Democratic neglect. But despite that, Democrats did really well. They flipped the Michigan House and Senate for the first time. They have a trifecta in Michigan for the first time since 83. Mm-hmm. Speaking of long ago years.
And did they in Pennsylvania too? I know that wasn't final yet necessarily, but they didn't flip both houses in Pennsylvania, did they?
They might have flipped the House. They did not flip the Senate. Yet. But they might have flipped the House. It's down to two races.
Okay.
Democrats have 101 seats. Republicans have 100 seats. And there are two races that are with about 95% of the vote in, or actually probably more. 50-50. Like, it's
that House has over 200 seats in it.
203.
Oof.
I know. It's not New Hampshire, though.
What's New Hampshire got?
New Hampshire has 400 House
Shut
seats.
Shut up.
I can't make that up. No.
They have a legislative body with 400 seats.
Yes, New Hampshire, little baby New Hampshire.
That's crazy. I mean, I talked to State Senator Jeff Smith yesterday, a friend of mine who won re-election. And now Republicans still control the Wisconsin State Senate and by a two-thirds majority, 22-11. But again, that's only 33 people. Although, as Jeff was telling me, it's like his caucus is now 11 people. So once you hold the elections for leadership positions, like everybody gets a leadership position except like one. One person gets left
and that
out.
That guy knows they messed up.
That person's the messenger. That person just is on the road constantly. And so that might be Jeff by the time all is said and done here. Minnesota, Democrats flipped the Senate there, I think.
Yes, Democrats have a trifecta in Minnesota. They flipped the Senate, held the House, and the governorship, to no one's surprise. So
again, it just only reaffirms, the blue wall, as everybody called it in 2016, has in many ways been substantially, though not fully rebuilt.
But, too soon. No, I'm not okay with it.
I know. But not in Wisconsin,
no.
Where again, gerrymandering is a hell of a drug.
Yeah. Yeah. Republicans are really good at it, but we kept the governorship. That's a big deal.
Yes, that and again denying that two-thirds majority in the assembly. So, what other little nuggets can we glean from the newsletter this week?
Let's see. In New Hampshire, that we were just talking about, in that 400 seat House, which theoretically might end up getting split 200-200.
That's funny.
They're still with that many seats. Like a couple votes here and there will decide every, many, many races. So they're still counting ballots there. But the New Hampshire House just elected the very first transgender man to a state legislature in the country.
There are a lot of firsts like that around the country this year.
It's very cool.
Which is really something because, again, it says we definitely had progress to make, but at least we are now making that progress in so many areas for gender, for LGBTQ, for Muslims, for what have you. So that's all moving, just not in all places, shall we say.
No, not in all places at all. But by and large, it was a good night for Democrats. Votes are still getting counted in Arizona and Nevada, but we know that Democrats held the Nevada Senate and the House.
And that was the point of my article about takeaways from the Wisconsin vote total. Wisconsin Democrats are stronger than people might think. Yes. Don't let the gerrymandering fool you. There's obviously a lot of work to do. Better investments could be made at the national level into certain rural districts. And, we'll go from there. But all that and more in the newsletter. Last one before you take a well-deserved post-election break. How do people get it?
They can go to statehouseaction.substack.com and sign up for it there. Or just go to the website and just, read last week's edition. This week's will post in a couple hours. So with a full rundown of everything that I was telling people to watch last week and how it all shook out this week. So
Carolyn Fiddler, thank you so much. Enjoy your time off. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. See ya. All right. In our next hour, we will have Mark Jacob, a former editor from the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times, and guest sportscaster Dan Schumacher. You're up north.